Welcome to the Tiny House Ideas Podcast.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Tiny House Ideas Podcast. I can't believe we're on episode 4 already. Thank you for tuning in again. Today I'm really excited about this episode. I'm talking to an architect from Australia called Nicholas Gurney. And Nicholas, I saw his work on a blog post maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and since then it's sort of always been an architect that's inspired me. So I was really, really excited when I reached out to him and he replied saying he'd like to be on the podcast. So today we're sort of going to be talking about how he goes about designing, creating small spaces and the tips and tricks he uses to make space feel bigger than it is, some of his client work, sort of the life of an architect and the things that go on behind the scenes. So the design style that Nicholas uses is very sort of functional based. He likes organizing space. And if you're interested in hearing some tips and tricks from someone who knows it best, then make sure to keep on listening and we'll give you an insight into the life of an architect, into what goes on in his day-to-day life and some of his client projects. So I'm really excited about this episode and I hope you guys are too. So I won't hold you up any longer and let's crack on with the episode.
Welcome to the Tiny House Ideas Podcast, the show where we talk about how to live a more fulfilling life with less. My name's Harry Alvarez Garman and I've got tons of exciting guests lined up for you, including authors, entrepreneurs and tiny house owners. If you love minimalism, sustainable living, personal development and everything in between, then you're in the right place. On this show, we'll be talking about how you can do more of what you love, how to turn your passion into a career, and how to live more sustainably.
My name is Nicholas Gurney, and my work is primarily in compact spaces, and in particular, making improvements to the utility and functionality of small spaces.
Okay, amazing. Well, it's brilliant to have you on the show, Nicholas, and it's sort of going to be really interesting to speak about small spaces, compact design, tips and tricks, things like that for the viewers and the listeners to take away. So sort of what got you interested in small spaces rather than sort of larger architecture and larger buildings then?
My background is in industrial design rather than architecture or interior design. My training informs my interest, I guess, in detail and in function, I guess function before form. But I guess I became interested in small spaces because, you know, I'm a young person and a small space is often an affordable entry point in any market. And I knew ongoing that if I continued down the route of designing small spaces, then I'd be working with like-minded people, people that I would have a synergy with, people that were in a similar position to me. And that just felt like something that I wanted to pursue rather than, not generic, but the path more often traveled where you design larger houses for people with more money maybe or something. Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. Well, I agree with you. I sort of do like idea of sort of having constraints, having sort of a smaller space and design to work with. And I think me and you are quite similar on that respect as well, sort of with what I've researched and learned about you, especially sort of the smaller spaces, form following function, things like that, I think is sort of things that now especially are being sort of explored and researched more as we sort of as the years go by. I guess it's sort of more people are looking to sort of downsize, go tiny, look at how things can be multifunctional, how things can do, like we say, 2 or 3 things. Yeah. So I sort of wanted to talk to you about one of the theories that you had, sort of organizing space and looking to sort of categorize things and sort of keep everything organized and have, like we say, function.
At the outset of a project, what's critical for us is the spatial organization. We're at the outset of a project, we're most interested in what it is that people need, probably before we consider what they want. And then for us, it becomes all about the space and breaking that down and organizing it to meet what it is that they need. And then we will move on to what it is perhaps that they want. And then we will imbue all of those other things on a space that are secondary to the spatial organization. A small space is a series of industrial design products, and all of those products go into making space. And it's those products, I guess, that helps resolve the issues around space and gives us that spatial organization that we're after.
So just a sort of bit of background about your business, your work, the stuff that you do. Is it a one-man show? Are you sort of working with a design firm or what's the deal there?
For a long time it was just me and I thought it would only ever just be me. Fortunately I had offers of work and it's hard to say no when the work is good work. I resisted for a long time, but then you know I'd be doing my clients a disservice if I didn't have resources. And no, I enjoy having the help. I think it's made me a better designer. Yeah, and a more efficient designer as well. Yeah. And a designer who gets a bit more sleep.
Which is obviously very important. And the efficiency and everything makes a lot of sense. And it sort of gives you more time to sort of do what you do best and sort of, yeah, focus on that, I guess. So what are the roles of the other two that you're working with then at the moment?
Well, I mean, our roles are all very much the same. There's no real hierarchy, I guess. I mean, I deal primarily with clients, and I guess in a sense I'm the creative director, but we all on any given day we'll all do more or less the same work. I think that's the best way to run a small operation. We'll be working on maybe the same thing at the same time or a couple of things at the same time, so everybody knows the ins and outs of everything that we're working on.
Okay, now that makes sense. That makes sense. Sort of, yeah, all be on the same page. You'll be sort of working on similar projects at the same time. Sort of makes it flow quite nicely, I can imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, works really well.
Yeah, definitely. So another thing I was going to ask you about was sort of, I'm aware that you've sort of done some projects like the Y20 Tiny House that we featured on Tiny House Ideas before, and then sort of comparing that to using a apartment, using a already sort of pre-built space that you're then repurposing to sort of make it more efficient. What would you say the main difference is? Obviously there's so many different constraints, so many different design choices and decisions, but what would you say the difference in the process between sort of starting with a blank canvas and starting with where the place would be?
The blank canvas is a tricky one. It poses a whole new set of problems, because for the Y20 in particular, that was something that we imagined could be rolled out, you know, infinitely. And so that had to suit a whole different number of locations, basically. And so it was a whole different context to designing a singular unit where you address the constraints within that unit. So, I mean, in designing the Y20, the Y20, a lot of the constraints were sort of hypothetical, whereas when you're designing a unit and making use of existing building stock in plain sight in front of you.
Yeah.
So in a sense, for us, it's almost like designing an apartment is an easier and more straightforward process, because it's what we do more often. But the Y20 was very interesting in its own right.
Amazing. Well, the first sort of piece of work that I came across from you, I read a blog post about the studio, and that sort of really hooked me, and I really liked the sort of way that everything was organized, tucked away, everything like that. And that sort of got me doing a bit of research, and then I found the Never Too Small YouTube channel as well, which I know you've sort of had a few features on. Would you mind just telling me about that? What's the situation there?
Well, Never Too Small is a great little channel that's gaining a lot of interest, and it's great for connecting us with potential clients and for spreading the work that we do. And they're based in here in Australia, but they're spreading pretty quickly. They just want to champion small spaces, because the guys behind that are sort of, they're young people, they live in small spaces, they recognize that this is a very topical thing, they recognize that it's a sustainable thing, it's sort of a glimpse into the future, I guess, for many of us. And yeah, I mean, that stuff is ongoing, and I really enjoy doing that. The pandemic has put that on the back burner a little bit, but yeah, it's nice to be able to see your projects in video, capture the ambience of a space in more than just an image form.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of more than just a still few pictures of some angles can show, sort of, yeah, really sort of go around the space. So sort of talking of the pandemic and everything that's happened so far this year, how has that affected you?
Well, I mean, believe it or not, and not to sound insensitive, it was actually quite good for business, particularly in the beginning, because with people being locked down, they realized that there were flaws in their living environments. We actually picked up a lot of work. At the same time, we had a lot of work put on pause. Yeah. Because there's so much uncertainty. We do some work that is designed for short-term rental market. All of that was put on hold, obviously. Anything that I think wasn't owner-occupied for us has been, during the pandemic, we've never probably had so many inquiries. People should really probably be getting work done rather than sitting on YouTube and probably watching our videos or something. But I mean, I foresee possibly a quiet period around the corner. I don't know what the future holds, but no, it's been okay for us. We've remained busy up until this point, at least.
That's good to hear. So it's actually really interesting. You mentioned just when you're answering that question there, that sort of the lockdown and people been staying at home has sort of brought to light a few flaws that they may have with their homes, their living environments. And that was sort of ties in perfectly with my next question, or the next area that I'd like to speak about, which is sort of how, in general, coronavirus, how the pandemic will affect how sort of people view their environments, how people sort of live and work and do all these sort of things. Because with so many people working from home, with so many people sort of having their children at home and sort of wanting to appreciate the outside more, wanting to sort of do more, I think people are sort of starting to realize and shift their focus that maybe they don't need this sort of thousands of square feet to live in, and they don't need three rooms that serve the same purpose. They don't need all of these different things. It might be sort of better if you're working from home to live a more simple life, to sort of cut down, to minimize? And do you think that's sort of going to be something, obviously we don't know what's going to come in the future, but do you think that's a possibility that there'll be a lot of increase in sort of smaller and more sustainable living now after this?
I think this may for many of us have been a little bit of a wake-up call, and something that really does highlight what is important and how truly important the home is to us and our living environment. But I think, it highlights how important our homes are in our quality of life, and how they should be functional spaces. And it doesn't matter if it's a small scale or a large scale. We always emphasise that people need a place to work, because logic tells us that the future, despite the pandemic, tells us that we will be working from home more. So we always encourage people to ensure that they have a place to work from home. And I think now it's going to be much easier for us in the future to say, look, your bedroom can be a bedroom at night, but then during the day it can be a great office. You know, in the past people think, oh no, my bed just stays there. I don't want to fold my bed away or move my bed away. But it's going to be much easier for us now to sell that sort of thing, because there's no use having these dormant spaces when they could be dual purpose spaces.
Exactly, that's the thing. And with sort of there being a widespread shortage of housing, with there sort of being, I know it's sort of slightly different in different places around the world, but I think sort of people now are looking to sort of, minimise, cut down, and sort of live as, not as simply, but sort of live in a smaller space and just be more, think more about things before they jump into it. And that's why I sort of, like we say, about organising space and having sort of a bedroom that can turn into an office, because originally, like we say, people would sort of want the separation. But now that everyone's sort of been at home anyway, there's been that lack of separation. You haven't had sort of a commute to the office. People have sort of realised that it's not the end of the world sort of doing everything like that. And when you're looking at the upsides and downsides of two different spaces, or sort of having one that can do both, it's sort of, you could heat a space, you could pay for the rent of a space, or you could just sort of use it more efficiently and then, get the job done easier.
Yeah, totally. Another thing that we often try to not push on our clients, but highlight the importance of the opportunity for privacy and solitude, the size of a space. You know, if there are two occupants in a small space, although they may not think it at the time and it may not be part of a brief, you know, it is important to be able to have space to retreat to and some level of separation. Being locked at home, there'll be some relationships that have really been tested. And so again, that's the kind of thing that there'll be no pushback now when we try and imbue these sorts of ideas on spaces.
Yeah, exactly. Well, moving on from that, the next sort of thing I wanted to speak about was, you mentioned it briefly earlier, sort of how you speak to the clients, how you create a brief and everything, but what would a typical project look like from sort of the initial contacting you to obviously design, to the fit out, to the completion? What would that look like?
It's the first thing I can say is that it's longer than people anticipate, unfortunately. It's a process that's not a quick one. And that's not often of our own doing. That's just the process of getting approvals and the time it takes just to put everything together and find suitable people to build a project and things like that. But we work very hard on establishing a really bulletproof design brief, because at the end of the day, the better the design brief, the better the outcome and the harder we have to work as designers. And so once that's established, then, I mean, we move pretty quickly to prepare a concept. And I mean, that directly addresses the design brief. So there, if we tick all of those boxes, then reasonably we should meet the client's expectations. And then when that's done, we move towards documenting the project through a number of stages, at which point we're talking to builders to see who might be available and interested. And we try and get on site as quickly as we can. But that process from inception to completion can often be, as much as we'd like it to be quicker, it just sort of ends up like that all the time, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where it's sort of obviously further out of hand, so it's difficult to sort of control all of these things. So everything that sort of can be done initially, it's sort of, there are roadblocks and sort of bumps along the way. Yeah.
There are too many uncontrollables.
That's the thing, uncontrollables, that's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. So speaking about sort of these projects that have been completed, is there one that sort of sticks out to you as being the most memorable? What have you enjoyed working on the most?
Well, look, I mean, I get excited about all of our projects. If I didn't get excited about them, we probably shouldn't be doing them. But I mean, the studio was for me a very important project, because it was very early in my career. Client, although I had to push very hard, invested in the idea, and it was unconventional, but to this day it remains probably the single most important project for my career. And it's, you know, it's 7 or 8 years old now, but it's still very, still a very, you know, relevant and timeless project.
It sort of
transcends in a way, although it's quite bold, it sort of transcends style and time and things. So it's nice to be able to have a project that, you know, maybe in 2030 I still look at as being as a modern project. So
yeah,
I think that's probably the one that stands out.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say it sort of, although it was 7, 8 years ago, I mean, if it was designed and if someone saw a picture today, they would think it was sort of done the last few weeks or whatever. Because I mean, it is, like you say, timeless. And I think it will really, especially as we're sort of speaking about the climate at the moment and how sort of things are headed in the direction of sort of smaller and more efficient living, I think it is sort of going to be something to sort of build from and to look back on as a recent, sort of cornerstone of that.
I hope so. I'm very proud of the project, and I hope that it is like that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And for the people that are watching and listening, well, obviously not listening, people that are watching will have pictures of the studio on the screen, so they can sort of take a look at the space. What would you say is sort of your favorite area, your favorite sort of compartment in that space?
I sort of like that the whole thing is an almost single compartment that has inherent functionality. And the hardest thing for me to get across the line was the color palette, because it's quite bold, but it was so important to the concept and to the way that the space was organized and the way that and to the ambience. So yeah, the thing that I like enjoy the most is the use of color.
Okay, fair enough. And talking of the use of color, the studio is obviously sort of a very different color palette to say the 5S that you've also worked on. When you're sort of looking at ways to make a space feel bigger or to sort of feel larger than it is, how have you sort of found it working with two sort of very different color palettes? How have you found that sort of making a space feel bigger?
I mean, the common theory would be that if you use light tones like white and wood and things, the space is going to feel lighter and airier and more open and things. And there is some truth to that, but at the end of the day, it's about how you organize the space and how you fill the space, or how you, moreover, don't fill the space. It's sort of less about color and material and more about the use of space. But I mean, we love the use of color, but it's, at the end of the day, the appearance of the apartment is its personality, and that conveys the personality and preference of the client.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, sort of like we say, the studio, it is sort of really thinking outside of the box, because obviously with the larger open space and then sort of everything else sort of tucked neatly aside, I think also obviously has a massive part in it, because there is so much free floor space that can be sort of used for whatever the person living there or the person staying there sort of wants. So it is endless possibilities, really. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we call the fluid space. If we can make a fluid space as large as possible, something even akin to, you know, a typical one bedroom space, if the functionality within that space makes it feel as though you are in fact in a one bedroom space, then it's a successful studio apartment.
And obviously, as you know, it's sort of the functionality that sort of shouldn't be sacrificed at all, that sort of, because with a lot of people, I think there's a common misconception that downsizing means downgrading or means sort of living or going without things. But I think it sort of teaches people to be resourceful, and you don't need three things in a large home that can do one thing in a smaller home, for example. So sort of in the kitchen, you don't need these three utensils when you can have one that does all three, sort of stuff like that, that is sort of feeds into the idea of less but better, and sort of investing in sort of the right thing initially, and then sort of not having to go back in sort of 6 months or so and buy something else is broken or sort of not working anymore or whatever.
Totally. That's a term that we use a lot is reductivism or extreme simplification. You know, one utensil is far simpler than three utensils. Yeah. If that one utensil will do the job of three. You're right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of a no brainer. I mean, sort of so many people's, if you sort of look in their drawers and whatever, you've got sort of three of the same thing, and then they all do the same as three of another thing and everything. But if you sort of really are intentional and you look at it and you sort of work out what you need, why you need it, why there's a purpose behind it, then it sort of makes everything so much simpler. In a smaller space, you've got less maintenance, less bills, less to clean, less to sort of worry about, and it sort of gives you more opportunity to like we say, do what you enjoy and use that sort of fluid space to make the most of it.
Totally, that's exactly right. The key word there being less.
So sort of talking about people that you've worked with before, if you're in contact with any of them, who you've sort of, clients that you've worked with before, how have you sort of found their transition into a smaller space? How have you found that?
Or at least they say that they do. I mean, we become quite friendly with our clients because
that's good.
It's a pretty intimate process. But a lot of the people that we work with are young people that I guess you could say are, you know, on the way up, and a small space in that regard is a transitionary space. And then we work with people who are downsizing and are older. And so for our downsizers, they're drawing comparisons between where they've come from, you know, being a larger space and moving into a smaller space. And then the younger people are talking about coming from a larger space and moving into a smaller space that, you know, they're coming from the family home or whatever. But people are actively, I mean, they're making this decision. This is an active decision. And they're excited by the prospect of living in a small space. So it's just our job to be able to make it comfortable and fulfill their aspirations, basically.
I'm just going to give a quick mention to Tiny House Ideas. So Tiny House Ideas is my business, it's my company. It's been what I've been working on for the last 5 years in the long term, and especially over lockdown, over the last year or so, I've really put some time, energy and effort into building this business. So Tiny House Ideas obviously started with an Instagram page, and it has grown and developed into the business that it is today. It's the perfect free platform for anyone interested in the tiny house movement, in the tiny house community. First of all of the images that I feature on Instagram, you can find out more information, you can get a full fact file over on the website. As well as that, there's a really cool tool called Find Me a Builder, where for free I will personally pair a few tiny house builders with you based on your requirements, and that will save you going through hours and hours of searching through Google results, take the stress out of it for you really. And obviously it's no obligation, I'll send you a few recommendations and it's up to you what you do with them. Another section of the website is the approved builders section. So I've been working with a few tiny house builders that I really stand behind, that I see the value in their work. So there's a profile there to sort of tell you more about them, and so you can contact them directly if you've got any jobs that you're interested in. And finally, on the website there's a section for tiny house vacations, so if you guys are looking to go away and to try the tiny house movement, to try the tiny house living, but don't know if you want to commit to it, if you don't want to live there just yet, then a vacation is a really, really great way to sort of get acclimatized, to learn more about it. And you can do that by clicking on the vacations tab of the Tiny House Ideas website and learning more and searching through some amazing holiday homes.
Brilliant stuff. So sort of obviously that's the physical aspect of sort of moving down from, obviously it might be the first house that they move into having left their family home, or obviously if you're older, sort of downsizing into a smaller space for other reasons. But you sort of agree with the notion that people who live in a smaller space have more opportunity to explore other things that they wouldn't do if they were in a larger house. So if you've sort of got more distractions, more to do in a bigger house, but if you sort of narrow that down, do you think sort of people are getting outside more, that they're doing more of what they enjoy?
Well, yeah, I mean, it comes back to connection. You know, smaller spaces tend to be in the heart of cities, and larger spaces tend to be further out. That's just how cities are built. You know, if you imagine that it takes, at the most simple analogy that I can concoct is, if it takes 2 hours to build a small space and it takes 20 minutes to, 2 hours to clean a large space and 20 minutes to clean a small one, then you've just freed up, you know, you've freed up time to do things. It's
exactly,
it's simple. I mean, it's not rocket science, and it's true.
That's the thing. So with you personally, did you sort of have prior experience with small spaces before you sort of went into explore that more and design for small spaces, or was it sort of coming from a larger space that you sort of saw the flaws, or what was that?
Well, I grew up in I grew up in fairly large homes. What we often refer to here in Australia as McMansions. They're, you know, mass housing that's built in inner states. Houses all look fairly similar. And they're quite mundane, and they were nice houses to grow up in, and they were comfortable and things, but they didn't strike a chord for me. But it was when I left home and moved to the city that I just became fascinated with the way that we dwell and the way that we occupy cities and small spaces. And yeah, I lived in small spaces for many years, and I did a few little renovations, and yeah, it was just I enjoyed the industrial design aspect of unlocking the potential and being, you know, experimentation and seeking ingenuity and things. It all struck a chord for me.
Okay, fair enough. That's sort of, it's quite similar to me actually. It's strange because sort of with me and my family, similar to you, sort of moving around and sort of larger houses, I guess. There was one time I was sort of maybe 8 or 9. I always sort of found myself gravitating towards smaller spaces, towards sort of nooks and crannies and stuff like that. And there was even one point where there was, sort of like a holiday house or something we're in, and the sort of thought of this big bedroom to me sort of seemed like, why would I sort of want to do this? And then there was a smaller sort of like closet wardrobe space, and it had a crack bed in it, And I thought, I wonder if this camp bed will fit sort of length in the closet. And then for the next sort of 4 or 5 days, I was just in there, had all my stuff around me, and it sort of felt a lot more comfortable, I guess. And that sort of initially sparked the interest. And then as I've got older as well, it's sort of been traveling and having the freedom of having sort of everything you have with you on your back in sort of smaller sort of hostel beds and having everything self-contained, I think, is sort of what's really struck a chord for me, at least, I guess. And that's sort of what's motivating me to sort of look into it as a sort of real prospect as soon as I leave university.
Do you feel more comfortable in a small space?
I'd say so. I think it's just sort of having the control, knowing sort of what everything does, where everything is. And for me personally, sort of not owning a lot of things anyway, is sort of nice to know that what I've got is around me, and that it's sort of, rather than having sort of drawers and drawers of tons of stuff I didn't know, I think, because I like everything very ordered, very structured, that sort of all has to be in its place. I think too much clutter and chaos sort of stresses me out too much. And I feel like it's like everyone says, tidy desk, tidy mind, stuff like that. So I think a lot of people do come from that avenue as well, sort of looking at as they sort of minimize their possessions and stuff, they think, okay, why can't now I minimize my home? Why can't I sort of look at alternative housing?
Cool.
Yeah. No, I find that really interesting. So now I sort of wanted to go on to sort of speak a few more of your projects that you've done. We mentioned briefly the 5S. Would you mind sort of just giving us a rundown of that project? We'll put some pictures on the screen for those that are watching.
Yeah, the 5S was for a young couple. The first time they left the family home for each of them. It was a fairly quick turnaround because they were they wanted to be in by the time that they were married. I think we missed that by about a week, but it was pretty close. Because it was their first home, we were able to sort of catalogue all of their possessions and then, in effect, design the space for it. And, I mean, there's a few crafty little manoeuvres in there, but the main one in terms of the spatial organisation is we created a lot of storage in areas that would otherwise be left void, you know, high up above doors, underneath beds. Where possible, the storage allocations are double the depth that they would ordinarily be. And this was to reduce the clutter in the space and to bring things together in as fewer elements as possible. There's a fancy pull-out dining table that goes away, and there's a pivoting TV on a perforated mesh wall, and little pieces of industrial design that just make life easier and more interesting and a bit more fun, and make sure that we're ticking off each of the things in their brief. They wanted a bedroom. They wanted a television in the bedroom, and they wanted a television in the living room. I didn't like the idea of having two televisions in 24 square meters. So we put one television on a rotating wall.
I think that's
it just made sense.
It just stuck out to me. And that sort of really, I thought, why don't people sort of think of that more often? Why don't people, that's more of an option. I mean, it just does make perfect sense, like you say. It's obviously that sort of, you've got the table that sort of can pull out, move around and everything, but everything else is sort of fairly similar to the studio in its place, like the built-in kitchen, that sort of stuff. What would you sort of say if we're talking about furniture? I know you've sort of done some freestanding furniture pieces personally before, but what would you sort of say weighing up the pros and cons of fitted to sort of freestanding furniture and application sort of pieces like that?
It comes back to that idea again of reductivism. If we can do without conventional pieces of freestanding furniture, then I guess we've simplified things. So the only piece essentially of freestanding furniture in that entire apartment is the sofa and the bed. They're the only two conventional pieces. The dining table is there when you need it, and when you don't, it's tucked away as part of the kitchen. But for us, we're always interested in a hybrid of joinery and furniture. I think conventional furniture is for conventional spaces, and small spaces are not that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And sort of for me personally as well, my I would say background, but also what I'm doing at the moment is studying furniture design at university here, and the way it's taught, the way it's sort of delivered, is so focused on conventional houses and sort of traditional techniques and designs that sort of suited houses maybe 50, 60 to 100 years ago. But now, at least in my head, I'm sort of thinking that personally I wouldn't sort of want to be living with some of the stuff that we're talked about, that we're sort of being asked to build or to design around. But I always find funny, I think my teachers sort of aren't on the same page necessarily, because one brief we were given sort of design some outdoor seating, sort of the rest of the class sort of come forward with these ideas of
intricate benches and always nice designs and everything like that. And I'm saying, okay, look, here's a bench. Why can't it have a bike rack? Why can't it have a bin? Why can't it have this that folds, this that does that? And they're sort of like, no, you're being too, there's too many things going on. You just need something really that is a bench. But in my head, I'm sort of thinking, well, why have something take up space if it can only do one thing? And I think that does sort of tie in. So I'm sort of trying to look at going down the avenue of similar to you, sort of having everything multifunctional and sort of seeing how that goes in the next year or so.
Yeah, well, totally. I mean, our argument is that, you know, if a space is so very tailored, then why would you buy a couch at the local shopping center when your neighbor is buying a couch at the local shopping center, but their place is not tailored? So, it just makes sense for us.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. Sort of look at the different ideas and thoughts that people have. But I think definitely in the long term and in the future, at least, it will sort of, like we said before, gear towards that in the future. So hopefully that will stand us in good stead.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So what would you say your sort of future plans are within the business, within sort of the stuff that you're looking to do over the next sort of 5-10 years then?
We'll continue obviously to do what we're doing now, and hopefully that, you know, it continues to grow and swell and more people endeavor to do the sorts of things that we're doing. I mean, we do get a lot of interest in our work from young architects and designers and things, so we hope that we can inspire people to do similar things.
Yeah.
And we hope that we can inspire clients to want to do the sorts of things that we do and live in the sorts of places that we create. But we're interested in growing our international profile and doing work overseas. We're doing our first run of international projects at the moment. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly the sort of thing that is transferable globally. You know, it's a small space is a small space, whether it's in Sydney or London or Abu Dhabi or wherever, it doesn't matter. So yeah, for us, it's about just trying to continue doing what we're doing and get the word out about doing more with less, I guess.
Are there any sort of other projects that you've worked on in the past that you'd sort of like to touch on that we can sort of obviously include some pictures that you've sort of had sort of like an interesting experience with, or that there's a piece or something, piece of multifunctional storage or whatever that you've sort of taken away and seen that as something you'd like to use again?
Yeah, I mean, one that comes to mind is the Warren, which is on, it's a sort of a gold clad place on that Never Too Small channel, but I don't have photos. For us, it's not about recycling ideas. We see each project as an opportunity to test new ideas. And genuinely, I mean, all of the projects, we've got so much unpublished work, we just need to get around to doing it. But all of the projects that we're working on now, in each space, we ensure that there is something new and hopefully ingenious in each space, that sort of big idea that solves the most complex problem. I mean, people, when they engage us, they'll often refer to an idea and say, oh, maybe we can bring that idea in. And I'll say, well, that idea was perfect for those guys and for that space, but for yours, maybe we could do this. So for us, it's less about recycling old ideas and revisiting old ones than it is about, it's more about new ones.
Okay, I like that a lot, because it is, so some things are so tailored to certain spaces. It's like, if you don't try all these new ideas, then you'll never know. And then you sort of might sort of come across the one that solves all of these problems. So it is, yeah, like the experimentation is really good.
That's right. That's right.
On the flip side of that, is there anything that you sort of, that you've done that you sort of really wouldn't do again, or that you sort of, any takeaways or lessons that you've learned?
We have learned lessons around, in the past, maybe we may have pushed too hard on an idea when we could have done something simpler. But I mean, our work has become so much about ensuring that the client has everything that they need, and we endeavor and work so hard to do everything in the most simple manner. So if there were things that we weren't happy with, it would just be that we couldn't get it, whether out of our own doing or whether we weren't able to convince the client to do it in its most simple fashion. That would probably be the only thing that would bug me. But no, nothing immediately comes to mind.
Well, that's good. That's good at least, because I mean, like you say, it's not sort of what works for you, because it's not sort of about the clients and what's worked for them, even if it's something wacky or whatever. But if it suits them, then it's great for you, isn't it? So yeah,
that's right. Yes, look, sometimes, in fairness, we are asked to do things that we don't really want to do, things that we don't necessarily agree with, because people are fixated on certain ideas, things that they've seen perhaps on Pinterest or something that they've coveted for many years. And sometimes we can't talk them out of that. And sometimes we think that we could do more with the aesthetic of a space and be a bit braver. They're the sorts of things that maybe that, yeah, I mean, projects, we could have elevated some projects, I think, by pushing a little bit harder. Okay. So they're probably the sorts of things that are missed opportunities, maybe.
And with people that have sort of got fixated on certain things, when they're sort of cutting down their possessions or when they're looking to move into a smaller space, have you got any examples of someone who's sort of asked for tons of storage for this certain thing or tons of space for this? Sort of, obviously, they'll cut down, have a smaller kitchen, but have tons of space for this. Have you got any examples of anything wacky like that?
All of our clients, at the conclusion of a project, will have significantly less things than they did at the outset of a project.
Yeah.
Right. But we're not going to make people part with their, you know, their board game collection or their stamp collection or whatever, you know, whatever they're into. We accommodate all of these things. But I think in engaging us, it's people are actively trying to live with less. And at the end of the day, you can max out a place. You can max out the storage in opportunities in a space. But if you run out of storage, you run out of storage, and people ultimately have to part with some things. But no, I can't tell you some of the weird things that people keep are not fit for.
But yeah, that sort of people filling space and using more storage ties into the idea that I guess more times than not, the amount of space that someone has will be filled regardless. If you're put in a tiny space, then you'll fill a tiny space. If you're put in a bigger space, then most people, obviously excluding the sort of people with less than minimalist and stuff like that, it's like everything. If you sort of have more money, you want to spend more money. If you have more space, you want to use more space. So I think it's the constraint that is, for me and you, I'm sure, is just exciting. It sort of, it makes you sort of make room for what is the most important. Yeah,
that's a common problem. I mean, that's society's problem, isn't it? We max everything out. Yeah, I mean, I can't solve that with a clever joinery solution or something, but that's individual taste and preference. And thankfully, those preferences are shifting, you know, in the right direction, I think.
Yeah, they definitely are. So sort of speaking of the people that are looking to explore this lifestyle, have you got any advice for someone who is looking to A, minimise what they own, B, look at living in a smaller space, or C, sort of any tips for how to prepare or how to live fulfillingly in a smaller space?
Well, I guess you have to be prepared to shift any preconceived ideas about living. You know, all of these conventional notions around living are not going to be successful in a small space. It does take sacrifice, but I think there's something truly rewarding about occupying less space. I can't quite sort of put my finger on what it is. It's just a lifting of that burden of being overcome by space and overcome by stuff. That idea that, you know, the things that we own end up ultimately owning us. And I think if we have less stuff and we have less space, then, you know, it gives us a certain freedom. That would be my advice, I think, just to be willing to be open to living in a small space as an exploration, you know,
as an
experimentation. It doesn't have to be forever, but it's a worthwhile mode of living, definitely.
Exactly. If you don't try, you don't know. It's one of those things. But then I think I meant to mention earlier, so sort of going back to what we were speaking about how everything is sort of multi-purpose and everything, I think the quote that the house is a machine for living in is sort of one that really is really prominent and really sort of underpins everything that we've been talking about, because there's so much logic in making things, as we've said so many times already, multifunction, sort of doing everything that it needs to do and more, and making sure that everything is sort of positioned correctly. Have you sort of had any examples of where it's sort of almost, well, it does sort of flow around and is a machine, so you've got sort of this next to that because that makes sense rather than across the room?
That, I mean, that's the case in everything, because if you consider the utility spaces in a small environment are the ones that need to work the hardest. And in a small space, they're very small. Kitchens are tiny, bathrooms are tiny. So often when for instance, we do a bathroom renovation, we, in a sense, we're happy to make the space smaller if we can make it more functional. You know, if you think in daily life, in everything that we do in daily life, we're after added efficiency. In everything that we do, we crave efficiency. But in the home, it's okay for the home to be an inefficient space, apparently. I mean, a kitchen doesn't need to be big. If you can stand in one spot and you can adequately do everything that you need to do at a kitchen, then that's an efficient machine. And so for us, it's we're happy to reduce things to its bare minimum if it means that in reducing it, it becomes more efficient. Size and efficiency, we would argue that size and efficiency are completely independent of one another.
Yeah, definitely. And I really do like what you said about when you're talking about the bathroom renovation, how you can make it smaller but make it more efficient. And I think that is another misconception thing that sort of people are getting wrong, because they think, okay, I've got this huge kitchen, therefore I can do so much more than someone can in a tiny sort of galley kitchen or whatever. But that's just completely not true, because they've sort of got to take them a few seconds to walk across to the fridge, then come back to them, chop something to them, sort of walk across there. Whereas if everything's at arm's reach, everything makes sense and it's in a logical order, then it is a machine for living in, which is what we're after.
Well, I mean, you know, a simple comparison there would be a commercial kitchen at one of the best restaurants in the world versus a residential kitchen. The commercial kitchen is capable of cooking for 200 people in a night, and it might be the size of a butler's pantry in a large house.
Yeah.
So, efficiency and space, they're completely independent.
Yeah, and organizing the space, as we've said as well. So I sort of wanted to just quickly touch on a few of the sort of main theories that relate to your work. So obviously we've spoken about sort of how less is more, how the house is a machine for living in, things like that. And you mentioned briefly sort of reductivism and how that's making the most of less and things like that. Minimism as well. I sort of wanted to speak to you about, is it utility? I've seen sort of mentioned a few times on your website. Sort of explain that to me. I'd imagine it's sort of the beauty of utility and the sort of things like that. Would you mind just explaining that concept?
Yeah, it is a melding of beauty and utility. For us, the utility is our primary consideration. But as designers, we find it quite easy to make something beautiful. But I believe that everything that is useful can also be beautiful. And there's no point having something that is only beautiful if it's not useful. If it's not useful, then you probably don't need it. So in everything that we do, we first say, okay, is this useful? Is this adding improvement to the space? And then we make it beautiful, because aesthetics is very important. People wouldn't engage a designer to do something that is purely functional, because people need to feel comfortable and people like ambience. And so beauty is very important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think because obviously we agree on the sort of form, sort of following the function being sort of main driving force, the most important thing. But I think it's also important to realise that because function is sort of the main point, it doesn't mean that the form has to be sacrificed. It doesn't mean that sort of because it does everything you need it to, it has to be sort of ugly or blocky or whatever, because people think, oh, that table is just a table, it's beautiful, and that's got sort of five purposes, and it's not. But that's not the case at all, because it is it's sort of still basically what I'm trying to say is that having something function driven doesn't sacrifice its form.
No, that's right. Function, we also think that, I mean, function is a beautiful thing, and function at the end of the day is, in many ways, it's universal, right?
Yeah.
Beauty is not. Beauty is subjective and personal, and so for us, we have to understand our clients, and then we conceive of things that are functional, and then we negotiate with the client until they believe that the thing that we have created is beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's when you do that, something has the quality of utility.
I do. And because sort of speaking about all this has really got me, like the rest of the day, I'm sort of thinking about ways I could do things and sort of, put me, like, inspired me into a mood of doing all the sort of design and stuff like that later on today.
Good.
I'm sure sort of everyone that's listening is sort of important to take away that function doesn't mean sacrificing form, that you can organize space, and that things sort of, that multifunction is the way to go now. 100%. Well, I mean, I could literally go on talking to you and sort of discussing this all day, but sort of looking to wrap it up now, have you got any sort of final comments or anything you want to mention or anything you want to say? Or
thank you for allowing me to ramble. It's always nice to be able to respond to questions that are a little bit out of the ordinary. I've never had to think before about opportunities missed or things that we've done wrong, at least not publicly. So I've enjoyed it, and thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you.
No problem at all. I appreciate it. And I think it is sort of the whole purpose of my whole sort of idea behind this is to make public the sort of thoughts and ideas that people are having, into to listen to a real conversation between us about how people can do things, and then hopefully someone listening where everyone sort of think, okay, maybe I can do this, maybe I can do that. And I think that is the sort of really exciting thing about this.
And yeah, and through your channels and the people interested in what you're doing, you know, you're tapping into the right people at the end of the day.
Amazing. Well, I really do appreciate you coming on to speak to me. It's been awesome to sort of pick your brains and to listen to what you've got to say and hear about all the projects. There'll be links for everyone listening and watching to all the sort of social media website and everything below to check that out. But yeah, cool. Just to wrap it up, massive thank you for coming on.
As always, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Tiny House Ideas podcast. If you've got any questions, any suggestions, any questions for future episodes, any ideas, then please do get in touch. Instagram's the easiest way to reach me at Tiny House Ideas. If you'd like to support the podcast, as I've mentioned, it's available on Patreon to support, and we've got a private Discord group there where we can have the discussion. We can really break down the podcast, talk about each episode, talk about upcoming episodes, and also watch all of the new releases early.